Hey y'all, Poodle and Maddie here from Reality Gaze.
Grab your favorite thong because for the first time, we're heading to the villa for the new season of Love Island USA.
I can't wait to watch Ariana babysit these shiny, oiled up adults who I'm pretty sure aren't there for the right reasons.
From the home-wrecking bombshells to the absolute wreckage of movie night.
Pull up a daybed and join us every Wednesday for all the Love Island USA drama.
Find Reality Gaze wherever you get your podcasts.
In 1919, he hit 29 home runs and was sold to the New York Yankees.
A three-run home run for Buffington. The Yankees now lead it by a score of 3-2. Bill Lee is now going over to a couple of the Yankees, and there they go again.
Swarm hits it to deep left. That might send the Yankees to the World Series.
Veritek and A-Rod going at it. Roberts is going. Posada's throw. Roberts, safe.
And what can I say? Just dip my heart and call the Yankees my daddies.
Welcome to Fan Base, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports. That would be the Red Sox and the Yankees. I'm Brian Shackman. He's John Senecal. This is episode 48. We will get to some specific things related to the Red Sox and the Yankees. Obviously, a huge, huge series between the two teams at Fenway Park at the end of this week, which we will get to. But because, you know, Bobby Dickerson, who's the bench coach for the San Diego Padres, third base coach, sorry, was a bench coach before. He is a friend of the show. As many of you know, two of our best episodes were with Bobby Dickerson. I think, was it last summer?
Yeah, no, it was like before the season started, before COVID.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And just, they were great. And if you know the show, you know that John has been friends with him for a couple decades, and he was in his wedding, yada, yada, yada. So there was a huge viral thing that went on in the dugout where Manny Machado started screaming at Fernando Tatis Jr.
The picture looks like he could have been a Karen or something, like that Karen. Well, he's like, ah!
And he was swearing, and it was on a hot mic, and I have some specific things I want to say about it. And basically, just, John, just lay out the story of what sort of led this. Really, it's probably been fomenting. I mean, this is obviously, it's not a one-time thing. There's obviously been some tension. The team is tanking. But what led to this specific incident?
Well, a called third strike that he thought wasn't a third strike.
Tatis didn't.
Yeah. And he basically stood there and kind of, you know, showed up the umpire or whatever and does his... Basically... When Machado gets in his face and says it's not about you, he basically made it about him, and that's what it all came down to. I mean, like you said,
made it about Machado, or
no, made it about himself. Like, it's like, listen,
who made it about themselves?
Tatis when he struck out,
right? So you're saying Machado's correct?
Correct, yeah. Because we've talked about Tatis over and over again, how he stands there and he pimps his home runs and all that stuff, right? And he's the face of baseball and everything, but I think at this point, Machado had to kind of humble him and say, listen, you know, you're not as good as you think you are, and you need to be a team player.
So it's funny. Some people think it's rich that Machado's giving some sort of got to be a team player thing. I know Bobby Dickerson loves him, but he doesn't have the greatest reputation necessarily. And here's what I would say is that Fernando Tatis Jr. is 22 years old. He's right. A baby.
Machado's 7 years older than him.
Right. He's 29. He's been in the league a long time. And so I do think that there is something there that maybe Tatis's perspective on the world is not... He's a baby.
Right.
You know, and he has a lot of growing up to do. My problem, and I think this is indicative of if Machado is sort of your leader, is... I don't even believe in a lot of the stupid codes of professional sports or sports in general. I think some of them are stupid and they're made up. They were some sort of thing that may have been unwritten 40 years ago, but like nobody...
The unwritten rules.
It's so stupid, right? That they've blindly followed these things that never really were a big deal, but just over time they've made it a big deal. But I would say that why can't Machado do that in the clubhouse? Why can't Machado do it down, you know, out of camera view?
Because you already said it. It's been boiling. I'm sure it's been boiling.
But why can't he say, listen, let's go talk? Or have somebody say, let's go talk?
It's
the fact that he's dropping F-bombs on a hot mic at the top step of the dugout, to me, is also a bit of a lack of leadership.
Remember, it wasn't like, you say hot mic, that's someone shooting it on their phone. It's not like the MLB cameras are right on him doing that. Again, not to defend him, right? You got to be cognizant that there's cameras everywhere nowadays, right?
Of course.
So you got, again, yes, you should take that to the clubhouse, but I'm sure that there's been problems before. I mean, why, what gets you to the point where you're going to get in his face like that, right?
I just think that
Fernando Tatis is a great baseball player, right? But he's very flawed when it comes to being a baseball player. But he's also 22 years old, and he's been pushed around in position, and he's been injured. And the team is tanking. They're still in the hunt, but they're a mess, dude.
They are a mess. And I guess my point is that I think that there's no doubt that Tatis probably has a bit of a runaway ego, and there probably needs to be some quality control
there. Or is it that Manny's
there.
A little jealous, too?
Yeah, well, that's my point is, like, I don't, and Manny got his money, and he should be fine, and I don't, and he's a guy that was historically has not run out some ground balls and hasn't played the field his hardest in some spots, and so, but I guess ultimately what bothered me, and I'm not into this macho thing, but it's like, if you really want to be a leader, I think that you either got to do that in private or find some way to sort of, I find one way that Alex Cora does is sort of be available face-to-face, but also chirp about it in the media a little bit, right? And that's a way, somehow he finds a way to do it. Like, for me, personally, like, none of that ever works for me. Anytime I'm a jerk, it comes back to nip me in the butt. It doesn't work for me, but it didn't sit well with me that Machado starts dropping F-bombs and it gets picked up. I don't think that that's going to be effective, right? And I think that, you know, Tatis could be probably like, listen, I'm making $100 million more than you, and you're on the downside of your career, so who are you? But I think to me, both examples, Tatis's ego and Machado's handling of it, show that there's a fundamental lack of leadership on that team.
Yeah, I would have to say so. There's definitely, I would think, right from the general manager down. I mean, I think at the All-Star break, he didn't pull off the right trades. They didn't have the right guns going at it. I mean, I think everybody was probably pissed they didn't get Scherzer.
Right.
But who knows? Again, like, Scherzer maybe didn't want to go there. You can't. We don't know the all inner workings. But again, they did not make the right moves. Snell hasn't panned out. Darvish hasn't panned out. Now, listen, I had talked to Bobby when I was down there in Miami. And he had mentioned a story about how he had a skirmish almost with a player in the clubhouse. And, you know, I won't name names, but if that was happening back at the end of July and you got someone skirmishing with a coach.
With a coach.
And then, you know, I asked him flat out. I said, you know.
And it's not Tatis or Machado.
It's not Tatis or Machado, but I asked him. It's a starter. It's a star. And I asked him, and I said, you know, you think you'd take him? He said, hell no. He goes, but he better, you know, when I walk in here tomorrow, he'll be expecting me. So, you know, if you got something like that going on, there's
Bobby Dickerson thinks he needs to fight for respect in a clubhouse, that's a problem.
And Bobby's not the kind of person that's going to take crap from anybody, but he's not the kind of person that's going to be going calling out people when they don't need to be called out.
But he also is a guy who hasn't had to deal with that because he gets respect stepping in the clubhouse. This is a team, I just looked at it since, I think, mid...
But Bobby's also the kind of guy that hasn't, you know, he isn't your pedigree. You know that from talking to him. So he's been in the trenches. He's seen some stuff. You know what I mean? It's not like... He's not going to call out a player in the clubhouse. I don't know how it started, but he's not going to call someone out for something if he doesn't need to be called out.
Right. But he has credibility with that. But this is a team that I think since mid-August is like 10-24 as of early in the week.
With high expectations.
Well, and they were right there with the Dodgers, at least, even if they couldn't catch the Giants.
I mean, they're still there, technically.
Listen, let's just be honest. They have to, as of the beginning of the week, they have to jump over three teams, I believe,
it's tough.
Just to get the second spot. So I'm not saying it's like the 1978 Red Sox type collapse, but it's a pretty dramatic collapse when they are, you know, now looking up at people like Cincinnati and St. Louis.
And they've spent a lot of money.
And the vibe, it's so funny because this outburst with Machado and Tatis, and we can move on after this, the energy around the team, like, and just watching stuff, like, it seemed to be broken for a while.
Yeah.
Now, my question is somebody like Bobby Dickerson, who's the third base coach, is his job on the line?
Well, anytime any member of the manager, obviously, is the first person that they're going to look at, right?
Right.
And the general manager. So anytime, you know, the front office down... You know, most of the coaches are year-to-year contracts. Usually it's the managers that get multi-year deals.
Oh, so like the guys like Bobby Dickerson are usually on one-year deals?
Yeah, most of the time. You know, unless you're some, you know, real reputable, you know, like say like maybe a Larry Rothschild gets a two-year deal as a coach. I mean, not to say Bobby's not reputable, but, you know, most of the coaches are on one-year deals. Now, the hope is that they stick around with the manager, right? Because the manager usually gets a three-year deal, most managers, unless you're an interim guy.
Right.
But again, then that's the flexibility that a team gets. So, oh, well, it's the pitching that's not working. Get rid of the pitching coach. Oh, it's the hitting that's not working. Get rid of the hitting coach. Right. It's not the manager's fault. So just like in corporate America, you got a little bit of shield before you start going after the big guns. But yeah, obviously, if you're not going to perform, just like in New York, Boone and Cashman and all those guys, of course your job's on the line.
I go back to, like, I have trouble, like, dealing when I was coaching high school and college, dealing with a kid who was a top recruiter, the best kid on the team. And this is like Division III sports or like high school hockey. Imagine if you got to deal with a young kid who's worth already guaranteed. And I think of both Machado and Tatis as young kids, but two kids who are you know, making $300 million,
right?
You know, and guaranteed. And how do you get them to listen to you? And how do you feel comfortable approaching them? Like, there's an air of unapproachability to guys like Tatis. How do you coach a guy like that? How do you tell him he's doing something wrong? Like, that must be so difficult. I can't imagine. And you got to earn his respect. And, like, there's a whole different way to massaging that athlete than it is, you know, the average guy. It has to be. Must be a nightmare.
I couldn't even begin just to be around the amount of the egos and stuff. And I guess that's what makes a good team, when you can flat out just get rid of all that, you know, when all that gets wiped aside.
So I think this is a real challenge to the people around a guy like Fernando Tatis Jr., because he is such a talent. But I mean, you think about where people listening, where were you? Where were you when you were 22? And if you were guaranteed $30, $40 million a year just
no matter
for showing
what.
Up, how would you behave? And I guarantee you, and that's why I like later in life, like, I used to be so judgy about things from divorce or drug use. Like, I can totally, this is so random, but I can see why rock and roll stars are drug addicts, right? I can totally see it, because, you know, they have this huge high of a concert, and then they have all this energy, and then they go out, and then they have to get up the next day and do it again. So I can see how the cycle of up and down, and the same with these athletes. When you feed the beast of ego, it's hard to get them out of that mentality. And I can't imagine what it's like. At 22, I couldn't handle that money. I would screw up left and right.
No, I couldn't do it either. I mean, not a chance, man. $340-something million, no way. But, I mean, if you're running a team like that and you have that much contract sitting around, I mean, I think, you know, Bobby kind of alluded to it a little bit when we talked to him about certain people getting chances over others.
Right.
And I don't know if you remember that.
Like, if somebody had to go, the manager or Tatis, the manager's going to go.
Right. And also maybe not having the experience you need to lead that group. Listen, you could say all you want about being a 32-year-old manager in the major leagues, or a 35-year-old manager, or a 38-year-old manager, and the boy genius or whatever. There's a big difference between sitting behind a desk and telling people what to do and sitting in a clubhouse telling people what to do. And to say, you know, you're in your 30s and bossing around a bunch of pushing 30 players, or you're in your 50s, you know, regardless of what they think, you got more cred, right? You might be the young buck and you might have a lot of testosterone flying and you think you're indestructible and you don't have to listen to anybody. But when it comes down to it and you look at someone's resume on paper, you are the one that's going to look stupid for not listening in the end.
Yeah, but it's hard to convince a kid.
Right, it's hard. So that's the special sauce.
Well, that's why
the Dusty Bakers. That's the Tony La Russa's, right? Even if you're out passing out drunk at stoplights, that's why you still have jobs.
Right.
Right?
Right.
That's the special sauce.
Well, yeah. And that's why guys like Cora, I think, have threaded the needle, but I think that takes us. And look at, like, a guy with, like, Gabe Kapler with San Francisco.
Last year in Philly, it was terrible.
Terrible.
They could not wait to get rid of him.
They couldn't fire him soon enough. But the point is that,
honestly, I thought they were crazy for hiring him.
100%. But I think what you realize is that the good ones learn from their mistakes. And Kapler's got a huge ego, and maybe he figured it out.
He was just in the right place, and they helped him figure it out.
Maybe they have leaders in that clubhouse.
Buster Posey.
Like Brandon Belt. You know,
know how to win.
Right. And so I think that's the key. And we got to move on. I don't think the chemistry on that Padres team is right. Right,
no,
they don't have a Mookie Betts. They don't have a Buster Posey, and they need someone. If they were smart, they'd go out and get somebody who they know Tatis would look up to.
It wasn't Adam Frazier.
No, but I mean, let's just be honest. Like, that kid needs somebody who's gonna listen to, and it's right now not the manager. And
Nelson Cruz
would
have been great, but going through the NL would have sucked
right
for him.
He needs to to DH. He's John Senecal. I'm Brian Shackman. This is Fanbase, a deep dive into the greatest rivalry in sports, episode 48. Oh, let's get to it. Let's get to what's going on for the rest of the season here.
Okay, I mean, obviously, talk about this.
Yeah, we do, because the Yankees, you know, again, we're not going to get specific because depending on when you listen to it, but I really think that they're in trouble, and 100% of it has to do with their schedule. And listen, we know by now, we've talked about it ad nauseum, they end the season against the Rays, and before that they have on the road against Toronto, and before that they have the road against Boston. The Texas series, who knows? I mean, they didn't dominate the Orioles, so you can't just assume that they're going to win 2 or 3
there. You can't dominate the Orioles and the Indians at this point of the season. You're not going to dominate the Texas.
No, and you got dominated by the Indians. So I want to look ahead to the Red Sox series. We seem to be looking at different things. We're not sure when Chris Sale's going to play. I see something that has him starting against
TBD.
No, I have him starting
Nestor Cortez Jr.
on Wednesday against the Mets.
Oh, not what about the looking further ahead? What about against the Yankees?
That he would not pitch against.
He wouldn't
the
pitch against the Yankees.
No,
so see, I have him pitching against the Yankees
so
on Friday.
We don't know. I'm looking at ESPN. You're looking at Yahoo.
Just like the weatherman says, too early to tell, Brian.
Right. Well, right now, as it stands, it's an ESPN game on Wednesday against the Mets, and Sale is listed as the starter, and
which that means he won't see the Yankees.
Right, which would put Pivetta, Evaldi, and Rodriguez against the Yankees. Now listed for the Yankees, I see Cole on Friday, Cortez Jr. on Sunday with a TBD on Saturday. Do you have anything different?
I have Cole pitching on Friday against Sale,
right.
Then Cortez Saturday, and then whatever able body they'd want to throw out there.
Right, so
on
right
Sunday.
Now I
Hopefully
have Cortez listed as Sunday and nobody for Saturday. But either way, I would say that you're going to have a situation where the Yankees probably need to sweep the Red Sox in Fenway Park.
The Yankees have built themselves their own grave. I mean, they have to play literally 800 ball. They can't lose more than two games the rest of the.
You really? I don't think it's that tight.
Oh my God, they're awful right now.
I mean, do you think they can only stand to lose two games? I think it does.
Yes, because the two games they lose will be the time that they. The bad ones, when everybody else wins. I've been watching this team all season. Like when my son, 15-year-old, is like, I can't watch him anymore. He's like, they just yank at you every different direction.
I haven't enjoyed. Listen, it's not even because I'm not a Yankee. I've enjoyed watching the Yankees all year. I just don't think that they're put together properly.
You can't be doing all the things the Yankees are doing right now at this point in the season and think you're going to win a World Series.
No,
you,
I mean, I don't. I'm just thinking playoffs.
You can't. I mean, but ultimately, what do you want? The ultimate goal is to win the World Series. I don't care if you're the Yankees with your 27 or you're the Red Sox that hadn't won in how many years. Every team's goal is to win the World Series,
well,
right?
I can guarantee you
they're not built to win the World Series.
No.
And all the damn strings they're pulling right now.
Well, if you say, and again, it'd be the 10th time we've done this, if you say that they can't lose more than two, I don't think there's any chance that they can do that then. Because I see. There's no way they're going to sweep. I mean, you're saying
say they have to sweep Boston, and then you can't say there's no way they're going
to
sweep.
No, because they have
to. Texas, right? Because that's the team they
got to
sweep.
Then they need to win 2 or 3 on Toronto and 2 or 3 on Tampa, assuming they sweep Texas.
Right, and then they're going to have to sweep another team.
I don't think that's possible.
But that's so. What happens if you don't sweep Boston? You lose 3 to Boston.
You're even
further back.
That's
what I'm saying. They can't lose more than 2.
Right? So you're pretty pessimistic, at this point.
Dude, they're awful. I'm just sick of watching them. I don't even want to use my data on my phone anymore when I'm going somewhere.
The funny thing
with
me is that I think the Red Sox are going to make the playoffs, and whether they're one and done or not, I'm not sure it matters. But I'm so mad at them for their COVID response that it makes, I really, and I'm not getting political, but the fact that so many guys on that team didn't get vaccinated to me is so disappointing. And you know, it's funny because
now, is it confirmed they weren't vaccinated? Because the Yankees had the same issue,
A lot of the cases in this recent outbreak, which I've read a lot about, Alex Speer, the Boston Globe, has a great sort of TikTok on it. But there were a lot of breakthrough cases, but they weren't all breakthrough cases. And I guess my point is that I think that you have to live by different rules when you're a professional athlete, because your behavior, one of the players, I don't know if it was Hunter Renfrow or somebody, and I don't even know that Cora's gotten vaccinated. I really don't know. And what I would say is that there's an element of selfishness that I think is involved, that I truly think that it It divides a locker room. I don't know if you noticed this, John, because you don't read enough Red Sox stuff, but there was a sense that, that there was tension between the vaccinated and the unvaccinated in that locker room, in that clubhouse. And to me, that's a problem. So part of me is like, listen, they're all coming back from COVID. Sale is like, I'm so grateful to be on the field. Bogaerts is like, I didn't realize how much I loved the game till I didn't get to play. And that's all well and good. But
weren't we just coming off like almost a whole year where they missed playing? They missed 100 games last year.
But that's what Bogaerts said when he came back, and that's what Sale said when he came back. But the bottom line is that I'm just, as a fan, I'm frustrated that those guys didn't just get the stupid shot so they could play baseball.
Yeah.
And it bothers me. So that's sort of my attitude. I do think the Red Sox are going to be one of those two wild cards.
So going back to what you were saying about the managers, remember I had sent you that screenshot I took where it said one on the 18th of September, one major league manager on the contending teams remains unvaccinated and participate in the postseason and be near players. Major League Baseball says managers, coaching staff must get an mRNA shot by October 4th and have a second scheduled. That manager has to make a decision first.
And you thought it was Boone who was in question. I thought it was Cora.
Right. Well, I mean,
just because Boone's dad.
It says playoff contention, right? So that's.
It narrows the list.
Well, it narrows it, but there's literally like 12 teams that are officially totally out of playoff contention. So, I mean, that leaves like 18 teams that, you know, it could be, we would like to think it's the Yankees or the Red Sox or some, you know, or Roberts or something, some buzzword.
I'll just say this right now as we close and we go to our nugget, then we'll say goodbye for the week, is that I can safely say that if the Red Sox don't advance, which I almost don't want them to, I definitely want, there's not a team in the American League, across the board that I would want to win more than Toronto.
Perfect. And that's what we're going to talk about right now at the end of the show.
Oh, really?
So
We didn't even research that.
But, I mean, listen, I'm a big Toronto fan, right? Like they're fun.
They're fun to
watch.
They're
a fun team. Listen, they got probably the AL Cy Young Award winner, Robbie Ray. My opinion, the AL MVP in Vlad Guerrero Jr. Right. A whole cast of kids that can just flat out rake.
And you have George Springer. They have Bichette.
Springer hasn't even been a factor for them really this year either. Like he is not. He's like an afterthought.
Right. He's so good.
And he's such a great player. Right. Mm-hmm. They got some decent pitching.
Pitching is their weakness, but they have some. Stroman's good.
Everybody knows when you're hot in the postseason, you get hot at the right time.
So you got a nugget?
So we'll talk about the Blue Jays, right? We're going to talk Blue Jays postseason. So the Blue Jays, since they've been in existence, they've been in postseason 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 times, right?
Right.
Dating back to 1985.
Right, and they won two series in
the
early 90s.
They won two World Series, 92 and 93. But the interesting thing about this is every team that they've lost to has either won the World Series or went to the World Series.
Huh.
So they lost to KC to start in 85. They won the World Series. Lost to the A's in the ALCS in 89. Won the World Series. Lost to the Twins in 91. Twins won the World Series. Won the World Series 92. Won the World Series 93. 2015, lost in the ALCS to Kansas City. KC wins the World Series. 2016, they lose to the Cleveland Indians. Cleveland goes on to lose.
Makes the World Series. Forgot. Kansas City won the World Series?
Yeah, over the Mets.
That's crazy. Yep. I feel like, oh my God. I think that the Blue Jays.
I thought that was interesting.
No, it's nugget-ish. And I mean, think about the other teams. I mean, who wants Houston to win? Nobody. I mean, LaRusse and
literally
Chicago.
Literally like 150,000 people in Texas want them to win.
I care less about the White Sox. And the Rays, even though I really admire them.
Nobody wants them to win. First of all, nobody can name five players on the Rays.
Arozarena, and that guy Kiermaier. That's it.
The guy that blew his elbow out.
Right. That's it. And Archer, who hasn't even really pitched.
And the guy
for him.
That's on the team that was found another team that should retire 5 years ago.
So the next time we see each other, we're going to be coming off that 3-game set with the Red Sox and the Yankees. So it's going to be really interesting for episode 49. He's John Senecal. I'm Brian Shackman, and we will see you, hear from you next week.
Lemonade! Fresh squeeze lemonade! Lemonade? Oh, nuts.
Is your business struggling to be seen, not reaching the right customers?
Yeah.
Odyssey's here to help. Your one-stop shop for digital marketing.
Wait, really?
With targeted digital media, plus SEO, SEM, social, OTT, and more, we help your business reach the right audience and drive results.
Whoa, hey, one at a time.
Stop missing out on valuable customers. Visit digitallocalads.com to learn more about our local advertising solutions. That's digitallocalads.com.
Okay, people, line starts here.